You're listening to Hidden Mysteries Radio, discussing the topics no one else dares to. What's going on?
Same old thing in hot Texas.
Yeah, Friday night in hot Texas. It was hot today too, wasn't it?
Like an oven.
Yeah.
No air moving, no breezes.
This is about the third heat wave we've had this summer, and it just about isn't summer anymore.
They said it's supposed to be cooler this time of year. I mean, a few weeks ago it said it'd be cooling down, staying down, and it didn't.
Yeah, the 13th.
Global warming, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
Just go outside.
Well, the globe is warming because it's like 100 degrees out there, but I'm not sure if I go along with all the baggage that comes with that term or not. But
well, I can't help what the stupid politicians added on it.
Right. But yeah, the globe, this part of the globe does warm this time of year, that's for sure.
It has been for what? We're in my seventh year drought, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as far as the... like the aquifers and the groundwater and all. Yeah, I believe we're still considered in a drought, but not this part of Texas, unless it's back in it.
No, they said it was, the aquifer had not refilled yet.
Oh, okay.
That was here on the, forgot which weather station reports that stuff, but I saw it on a weather station.
Yeah. Well, you know, one way you can tell when it's really bad around here is little town just south of us, Frankston. Highway 175 runs through that, and about halfway between Frankston and Jacksonville, they have an old artesian well right by the highway and coming out of a hill there where lots of people, you know, for, oh, decades and decades.
We would go get to work.
Yeah, it's a little old pipe sticking out the side of the hill that constantly has water running out of it. It's got a little grate under it. And you know,
because some Ozarka was trying to steal it.
Yeah. Every now and then, I think maybe, you know, I lived here for years and years back, way long time ago, and I've lived here 10 years straight now. And I think in all that time of living here, maybe twice, I'd read about it in the paper that they were concerned about it. Because, you know, way out here rural, especially over in that area by Pointer, there's still people that live in houses out there where they've got an outhouse and no running water, and they go up to that artesian well to get water. So, you know, and the water table has to get really, really low for it to quit dripping out of there. But anyway, and also it does have the advantage that at least right here where we're standing and for about a 10-mile radius around the lake here, even when you're in the middle of a drought, the springs are all full of water because we're got this proximity to a 25,000 surface acre reservoir.
You ever been to that underground lake in Texas?
No, I haven't.
That's interesting. That's it. Very interesting to see a whole lake underground.
Yeah, whereabouts is that?
San Marcos.
Yeah. Nice. Now, I have been to San Marcos, but I didn't get to go do that. But I was just there overnight one night.
They have probably the only fault cave in Texas there.
Yeah. Well, they have hills there that could technically probably are considered mountains based on the, you know, how steep the rise is and how high they go.
Very steep. They're not all that tall.
And they've got one that is. I went there,
compared to the Rockies, it's not that tall.
It's got some name to it too, but I can't remember. Oh, no. It's nothing like that. It's not even anything compared to the Ozarks or any of those, you know. But no, I'm talking about just in geological terms, based on the angle of the slope and the height of the hill, they're probably considered mountains. Because even here in Northeast Texas, where we're not in a mountain range, just a few miles to the northeast of us here, we have what the geologists will tell you are mountains, and they're called mountains, like Mount Selman over there. Yes, you know. But anyway, but you know, I mean, and like I say, somebody who lived in the Appalachians or the Ozarks or something like that, they would rightly laugh at you if you said, yeah, I live in the mountains. But when you live now, and here where we live is certainly not flat. This is the hills of Northeast Texas. But when you get over there in that area to where the, you know, Mount Sylvan and all that over there, and you get on those actual hills that they call the mountains and stuff, when you're used to living here just in the hilly region, it does seem like a mountain driving up those things.
Yeah, in those rural areas down there around Austin, it's the same way, but it's just a different scenery.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big old hills.
Oh, yeah.
Canyons.
Well, that's what they call the hill country.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of Texas, you just, right before I clicked the record button, you ran across an interesting story. You want to move your microphone over there where you can read that and tell us about it?
Hold on a second.
All right. Yeah, Ghost has to move his business around here because he's got his computer behind him. There he goes.
Okay. It says the Texas Attorney General sues himself to stop himself from releasing documents that he himself cannot be released.
Well, how does that work?
Well, I know what he's angling for. He had to deny an open records request, evidently, for a police department based on current precedent law rather than actual law.
Yeah.
So he's forcing it into the courts to get a legal ruling over whether this police department can continue holding these documents back from the public.
Yeah, because one of the things that we have in Texas that I think you and I probably agree is one of the stupidest things anyone has is that none of our laws are actually laws until they're tested in a court and a judge decides whether they're a law or not, pretty much, or how it works.
Well, they determine what that law said and what the interpretation meant, but they also create law when there's not one that covers a particular issue in the statutes.
Right.
And that gives them the power of legislators.
Yeah. And speaking of creating laws, just as an aside, I just want to spit this out before I forget it. This is my ADHD's talking again, but I saw a tweet from somebody. I don't think it's even anybody I follow. I think it was just random. Somebody had retweeted it, but the guy pointed out, he said, the Supreme Court says that the Bill of Rights guarantees everyone to marry anything they want, but we have the Second Amendment, and they won't say, and they let all the states deny people the right to carry a gun around with them. How does that work?
They deny guns, they don't deny arms. It's illegal.
I know, but guns are arms.
We have to inform them of that.
Yeah.
They won't break an arms deal.
Yeah. Well, they might. I don't know. They definitely broke.
That's one thing. They like to illegal weapons, illegal guns, but they never say illegal arms.
Right. Well, you know, that's one of the things they enjoyed breaking about that was that whole Fast and Furious mess. Nobody ever got into any trouble for that.
I don't know why anybody should get in trouble with weaponry after that fiasco.
I know. Well, okay. Let's, the Attorney General that you're talking about, what's his name?
Let's see. Jenny, Ken Paxton.
Ken Paxton, yeah. I don't know what I think about him yet. You know, the reason that I don't know much about this guy is what our attorney general's new. I'm sure anybody who keeps up with politics state by state knows that Abbott was the attorney general of Texas before he was governor. And I think he was well suited to attorney general to governor. I don't know.
He hasn't shown us anything yet. But then again, the governor position in Texas is toothless tiger, is what we call it. It has no power.
Yeah. Well,
that's power veto. That's it.
Well, veto and bully pulpit.
Yeah, I guess they'll point a few offices, and they might take that away from the governor since Perry did such a lousy job of he was given in charge of appointing everything to the new juvenile prison system.
Yeah.
When he evidently appointed about 50 pedophiles to it.
Yeah. Well,
they were all his best buddies.
Cronies. That's what I was going to say. Birds of a feather.
That's right.
But. Yeah, he's out of the race, thank God. His Sarah Palin glasses didn't even help, his hipster glasses.
Hugging on Sarah Palin in Texas didn't help at all.
Yeah. Well, a lot of Texans really like her.
Liking her and hugging on her is two different things. You know?
Yeah, well.
Agreeing with the beast and hugging its dog, you can't do that.
Well, that's probably what she's best for, hugging on, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, they made a movie about her, and she didn't care for that.
Yeah. Yeah, what is it called? Who's Nailin Palin?
Yeah, something like that.
I think Larry Flint made that movie. Anyway, but yeah, I think, you know, I still don't get people who I don't get people who take her seriously and talk about what a great candidate and conservative mind she is. But I also equally don't get people who hate her so viciously because she's really a comical character.
Comical, but certainly not presidential.
Well, I mean, you don't have to.
I mean, and then after you told me, reminded me about McCain today, and she was running mate.
Yeah.
We're supposed to trust traitors, right?
Yeah. This is from an article that I read over on LouRockwell.com. And it's talking about the USS Liberty. And I don't really care all that much for the article because it lays too much of the blame. Well, not, there's not no amount of blame too much to be laid on the U.S., but they act like it was all a big plan by the U.S. and not Israel. You know, like that the U.S. ordered Israel to do this. But he does have documentation that the person that LBJ, appointed to, head and coordinate the cover up of the USS Liberty incident where they purposely bombed our ship for hours and machine gunned the lifeboats. Let's not forget, that's an important point. Let's not forget they machine gunned the lifeboats, which even if they had been in a declared war against an enemy and had, that's a violation of international law.
Every time you hear the word Auschwitz, I just immediately come back and retort USS Liberty.
Right.
What's worse?
Right. Well, anyway, so the USS Liberty certainly didn't have a swimming pool or,
The USS Liberty is worse because the people we freed from Auschwitz did it.
Right. Well, anyway.
We should never have freed them. But should have left them there.
Right. I agree. Well, somebody was saying today that, you know, that, they were pointing out that, you know, who was it that was bombing all the stuff all around the camps? It was the Allies that were bombing all around the camps, you know, while they were starving in there. And I said, well, too bad they missed all the Jews. They should have had a smart bomb.
Well, I like that Jewish song that came. It was really popular back in the, I think it was in the 70s. You know, what is Israel good for? Absolutely nothing.
Oh, yeah. That was This Lion to Family Stone or something like that.
I had my own lion.
Right. Well, but the reason we brought this up was the guy has good documentation that the person who was put in charge personally by LBJ to coordinate the cover up was a certain fella named Admiral John S. McCain, the father.
The traitorous father of the traitorous son.
Yeah, and now he was the first person. He's the guy who set up this crony spoils system for Pentagon and Department of Defense.
Rip-offs.
Where
Ponzi schemes.
Well, see what it is, and everybody knows this. And, I mean, there's been a million Hollywood movies made about it, and you can go read all kinds of books about it. People have been exposing this system since the 60s. But after World War II, when we started the giant buildup of the U.S. military industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about on his way out, they established this Pentagon DOD procurement program where they have a procurement department and procurement officers. Now, what the job of procurement officer means is your job to be wined and dined, provided with hookers and vacations and all that, and whoever provides you all that stuff to the degree that you find most satisfactory, you get the taxpayer to pay for billions and trillions of dollars of useless shit from them that they don't need, like all these F-35 fighters that I just read an article yesterday where the Department of Defense admits that these multi-billion-dollar aircraft cannot dogfight. You know?
You don't need them killing dogs. You don't need them to be able to dogfight.
Right. But the thing is, they're dead in the water. If they according to what I read, if they have these fighters up in the air and, you know, somebody who's got a bunch of the last few generations of the MiGs scrambles their MiGs out, or even somebody who's got, like Israel or Saudi Arabia, who has, you know, lots of our old F-14s, F-15s, F-16s, etc., scrambles them out, and these new multi-billion-dollar aircraft are just dead. They can't dogfight.
And they knew it when they bought it. And they paid way too much for them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just amazing that in almost every and of course, this stuff's not obeyed because, as you know, Ghost, and as our listeners know, everything about our government systems has been broken since the 50s. I mean, at least in the 50s. Now, I know our constitutional protections and our protections as citizens of a republic have been broken a lot longer than that, since, like you always like to say, 1861.
That's when it started.
Right. But I'm talking about, at least, you know, back in the 50s and the 60s, early 60s, and all, we still had things like highly efficient bureaucracies and government departments, and highly, you know, our roads got fixed, and our services to the people ran efficiently, and all that. Everything's broken now. And the thing that's been broken longer than anything else is all the immense amounts of safeguards and checks and balances that we have to prevent graft and corruption in various government procurement. But what I was going to say was, in every other area of government procurement, whether it's federal, state, local, whatever, other than military, we have all these protections, at least written into the law, to stop cronyism and all that. But in the Pentagon, where the biggest deals are made and where the most vast sums of taxpayer money are up for grabs with the very least oversight, not only do we not have these protections, but the system is actually designed to promote cronyism, graft, bribery.
The reason some people suggest that Rumsfeld was getting ready to put the thumb screw on this waste in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And the Department of Defense, the Pentagon people, decided to pull the 9/11 or help assisted in it.
Yeah.
To shut that investigation of the lost monies down.
Yeah. Roosevelt.
No, Rumsfeld.
Oh, Rumsfeld. Yeah. Well, yeah. But isn't that weird that they had just announced that, how many trillions of dollars was it missing from the Pentagon? I mean, it was
a huge amount.
It was trillions of dollars.
That's a drop in the bucket compared to what the bankers causes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it was all that. But anyway.
They cannot account for any of this money.
Yeah.
Well, I saw hundreds of thousands, if not millions, being used as footballs in Iraq by soldiers.
Yeah. Well, you know.
What do they need all that money for?
What would be really cool is if we could ever accomplish our goal, the goal that you've been fighting for a long, long time, which would be a free and independent Republic of Texas. One of the things I think would be, not only would it go farther than any other thing I can think of to prevent this type of military procurement graft, but it would also solve so many other problems endemic to the systems that we understand them in the West now, especially in the United States, would be if, instead of the new republic developing a military system based on what the United States has at this time, would be if they developed one based on what Switzerland has.
That's been discussed many times.
Yeah, and where each citizen is trained and armed and ready to go all the time, and they have their military small arms at their house, and the bigger stuff like the tanks and grenade launchers and armored vehicles and all that are at local centers, much like what we call our National Guard armories here.
I think it was Bush years when some of the Republicans, this was actually, I thought was a good idea, where everybody serves their country for 2 years because you had technically owe a debt to the country.
Yeah.
And some of the healthier young people would go to the services and the military when they needed them.
Yeah.
But if they had an objection to it or preferred something else, they might do health in hospitals, in government hospitals as extra help.
Yeah.
Peace Corps type stuff within our own country.
Well, yeah, there's all kinds of things. I mean, you could select people. If somebody had special skills, there's all kinds of things you could do. You could have people who are really good in academics and maybe college students or whatever be tutors at summer school to help the kids who failed their classes and stuff like that.
There's a lot of ways you can serve that 2 years under a system that's well, we're supposed to be where they assume all people are equal.
Yeah.
As far as your debts.
Yeah. Well,
and
you know,
that's a debt to society's way.
Well, the thing about it is, though, you know, Ghost, and I'm real attracted to ideas like that too, because I am a patriotic guy. I think you know that. And, but the thing is, we don't have a nation right now. And by not having a nation,
we have a coalition.
Yeah. Well, an oligarchy and a corporate,
We have another Leviathan. The corporations are in control.
Yeah.
Lincoln warned us against it. And Hitler thought so much about it, he warned us against it.
Mm-hmm.
And so did Teddy Roosevelt.
And Eisenhower.
Yes.
But you know, and Kennedy.
Yeah, Kennedy too.
You know. But, you know, the thing is, the problem that we have with this stuff is that we have had this globalist, elite rulership for so long that the idea of nationalism has been denigrated. The idea of a nation has been blasphemed and turned into something that it's not, you know. But if somebody were to say, we're going to start this program again in America, and I were of age to be going and serving that stuff, I'd tell them to go to hell. I'm not going and serving 2 years for this. This isn't, I mean, what makes anybody an American? A freaking piece of paper? No thanks. I'm not, this country hates me and I'm not going to go serve it.
That's the brainwashed news media reporting stuff that makes anybody that disagrees with a war agenda a traitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're probably more constitutional than the traitors that went over to do the fighting.
Sure. Well, I mean, okay. What did Iraq have to do with 9/11?
Had nothing to do with 9/11.
Okay, and what did Afghanistan have to do with 9/11?
Nothing.
Nothing.
What did Israel have to do with it?
Everything.
So why didn't we bomb Israel instead?
Okay, well, I'll tell you why. Because Israel has... you know that ring that goes in the nose of like a hog or a bull to where you can control him? You know, they got a ring pierced in their nose that you can attach a lead to.
It doesn't work on these teenage girls.
No. Israel has one of those rings installed in the balls of all our politicians.
No, they don't.
Sure they do.
Cut the balls off, then attach the ring.
Okay, attached to some kind of sensitive bit that they've got.
A ball of scrotum.
Yeah. But yeah. That's a good description of Washington, D.C. is a big ball of scrotum.
That's basically what Tel Aviv is, too.
Yeah. That reminds me of a joke. This old man went to the doctor, and the nurse came in there and told him to get undressed, and the doctor would be back in a minute. And he got undressed, and he's sitting on the table, and the nurse walked back in for a second, and she noticed he is negging. She went, "Oh, excuse me." And she went back out the door and gave him time to put his little gown on. And when he got his gown on, she walked back in there and he said, "Sorry, I'm sorry about that." He said, "Oh, well, that's no problem, my dear. Did you see that West Point cadet standing at attention?" And she said, "No. All I saw was a wrinkled old veteran sleeping on a couple duffel bags." But anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about the happening, the hashtag I stand with Ann and some of the media response to Ann's super based comments on Twitter Wednesday night. And we'll discuss that just briefly. And then we're going to talk about a little bit of attempted FBI infiltration. And it'll be interesting because Ghost and I both have a lot of experience with, you know, organizations, groups, and situations that with nothing illegal,
like Department of Corrections,
right? With no illegal, I'm not talking about illegal stuff necessarily going on, but that the FBI has wanted to and perhaps has at times infiltrated. And we're going to talk about how to protect yourself and how this guy that they just tried it on did a good job also. And so we're going to do our commercials now. I want everybody to turn off your mind and float downstream and buy a lot of stuff from our sponsors.
You've known from early on that being a Texan means something special. You probably even learned when you were in school that Texas had the right to make its own choices. Now the time has come. The time to make a decision for Texas. With an oppressive federal government passing legislation for climate control, health care, bailing out banks and automakers with trillions of your tax dollars, and failing to secure our border with Mexico, it's time for Texans to take a stand. Even Texas Governor Rick Perry had this to say about the current state of affairs.
We think it's time to draw the line in the sand and tell Washington that no longer are we going to accept their oppressive hand in the state of Texas. There is a point in time where you stand up and say, enough, is enough.
What do you want for the future of Texas? It's time to make a stand. Enough is enough. TexasNationalist.com.
Truth seekers and freedom-loving Texans, HiddenMysteries.com is the place to find those hard-to-locate books for your research. HiddenMysteries.com has the largest and most diverse knowledge-based selection on the Internet today. Be sure and visit HiddenMysteries.org for over 12,000 free articles for truth seekers. Visit HiddenMysteries.com today or call 903-876-3256 for a free catalog.
Just keeping it Texas on an RFT. Just keeping it Texas the way it ought to be. As Texas as chili and barbecue. Keeping it real for me and you. Just keeping it Texas on an RFT. Texas, where you wanna be. RadioFreeTexas.org, bringing Texas to the world. Just keeping it Texas on an RFT. Just keeping it Texas the way it ought to be. Radio Free Texas, where you wanna be. RadioFreeTexas.org, bringing Texas to the world.
You're listening to HMR, Hidden Mysteries Radio, HiddenMysteriesRadio.com.
Hey, Ghost.
Yes.
We're back. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Me too. Brought my beer and everything.
yeah. We just, during the break, we had a little Sonic, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
But,
no Falstaff.
No Falstaff, no.
No Schlitz.
Do they even make Falstaff beer anymore?
I don't know.
I remember,
I don't know if they make Schlitz anymore.
Well, they didn't for a long time, I don't think, or at least not down here. I remember when I was a little kid, which was, like, 1969, when I was 3 or 4 years old, my dad used to drink Schlitz. And, you know, they quit making it, and he drank Coors mainly for most of the rest of, you know, me being young, living with my parents. And, he moved up to Indiana back in the 90s, and I went up there. And that Schlitz, boy, it was terrible, I thought. I went up there when I was in my 20s to visit him in Indiana, and he said, look what I found. Look what they sell up here. Schlitz. I thought, oh, great. But that Falstaff, that's the one that when I was a teenager, early 20s and all, if you came out here, you know, I lived in Tyler back then, and I would come out here, as this is where you used to have to come to get your beer and wine and whiskey and all, and come out here. And if you were low on funds and you walked into any of the liquor stores here and you say, what's the cheapest case of beer you got? They'd say Falstaff. And, was that a Texas, regional brand or?
I have no idea about Falstaff.
Yeah.
I just remember the ad for Schlitz. If you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer.
Yeah. Yeah. one that I think was maybe
the one from 11,000 Springs was nice.
Oh, Pearl.
I thought it was Lone Star, but maybe.
It was Lone Star Pearl One, but back in the day, you know, back when we really used to drink that, they make Lone Star. I don't know if you would say still or again, but they make Lone Star. Matter of fact, right here in Dogwood City, the next little town over, I noticed we've got a new billboard. By new billboard, I don't mean a new sign on an old billboard. I mean a new billboard, and it's Lone Star beer ad on it.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. Might as well promote
the corporations. It was bought out by corporations up in Wisconsin.
Yeah. Like that. Probably so, or
still see a producer here,
or though. Somebody over in Missouri. Lots of our beer comes from Missouri. That's where all the Budweiser and, you know, that's, you know, Bush that owns Budweiser and all that. That's where they're incorporated. St. Louis.
Bush.
Bush.
President Bush?
No, this Bush has a C in it. You know, so I doubt they're related.
They probably are.
Well, maybe
Bush
so.
Bush Bavarian.
Is it?
That's the name of a beer. Bush Bavarian.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But without the C in it, I guess you could probably say it's it could be an English name. They claim they came on the Mayflower.
Well, when they got here, people couldn't spell.
Yeah, that's true. I got a couple of...
Much like it is now.
Yeah. Well, while you were finishing up your chili burger over there, I got to just tooling around a little bit, and I ran across a couple of stories, one of them that I already knew about, one of them that I did not, but they are closely tied in together. I thought maybe we'd spend about 5 minutes talking about this if you want to. Okay, I've lost them both. Hold on. Who would have thought this had happened? Okay. I know where I had it, though. If the internet will work. Okay, we're getting there. Well, okay, while I'm looking for this link, the story... Okay, here it is. Here it is. Black student admits hanging white-only... Black only signs near school bathrooms, water fountains. The cries of racism broke out across the campus of the University of Buffalo this week when students found Jim Crow-esque signs in a building on campus. Someone had posted white only and black only signs near several bathrooms and water fountains in Clemens Hall. It brought up feelings of the past, of a past that our generation has never seen, which I think is why it was so shocking for us to see, Micah Oliver, president for the Black Student Union, tells ABC 27. More than 100 students turned out to a Black Student Union meeting to discuss the signs. There was fear expressed, anger, disappointment, all of that, according to Oliver. And then Ashley Powell, a Black graduate student, stood up in the meeting to admit she had hung the signs, claiming it was part of an art project, the Buffalo News reports. Students were reportedly outraged and walked out of the meeting. Other students denounced Powell's project as racist and an act of terrorism. According to the news, the project was for a 400-level art class titled Installation Urban Space. Powell said the goal of the signs and project was to see what people's reaction to them would be. I apologize for the extreme trauma, fear, and actual hurt and pain these signs brought about, Powell said in a statement, according to the Spectrum, the student newspaper. I apologize if you were hurt, but I do not apologize for what I did. Once again, this is my art practice. My work directly involves black trauma and non-white suffering. I do not believe that there can be a social healing without first coming to terms with and expressing our own pain, rage, and trauma. This was more than a black issue, more than a black student union issue. This was a student issue, Oliver tells ABC 7. The student body should be offended. University administrators released a statement saying after an initial investigation by university police, it has been determined that the signs posted in Clemens Hall were part of a student art project. The university is continuing to review this matter through appropriate university policies and procedures. Well, so what the university is telling you there is that, as anybody would have known before even being given the details of this story, that what's going to happen to this black student is nothing. If it had been a white student, they would have been drummed out of college and probably would have never gotten a decent job anywhere. The other point I want to make before I get your opinion on this, Ghost, is, you know, in her statement, she says she apologizes for the extreme trauma, fear, actual hurt, and pain these signs brought about. Well, let me tell you something. This crap goes on all the time. I've been following this stuff for years now. And whenever you find a swastika spray painted on the side of a temple, it's always, whenever they find out who did it, it always turns out that it was a Jew who did it. Whenever you find a noose hanging over some black student's door or nooses around campus or whatever, or this kind of thing, or somebody spray painted niggers go home on the MLK statue in some public space somewhere, whenever they find out who did it, it was always a black student. And the only time there are any exceptions to these rules is when the person that they found out did it was like a high school freshman, you know, just some idiotic school kid prank crap from somebody that didn't know any better. And so to add to that, when she's apologizing for the pain and trauma and all, she's talking directly to these black student unions kids. And I'm not diminishing the fact that their feelings and all got hurt, but that's all that that's the depth of the trauma that they get a little bit offended. Okay. The people who are the victims of this crap every single time that it happens are your straight white, students at the school who everyone every single time immediately assumes that it was one of them who did it. And until it comes out who did this crap, the white students get browbeaten and treated like second class citizens. And, everybody that, you know, they get all the, aspersions thrown at them that they can't defend themselves from. And they have all this suspicion thrown at particular individual students who might have said things in the past that some person of color didn't like. Something has got to be done about this, because I guarantee you, Ghost, if I had gone, like, say I go and I enroll in a college course, and at some point I decide that, you know what I think would be really cool is, I'm going to, put up signs in front of the door to, say, the Jewish Student Union, the entrance to the Jewish Student Union building that says, Auschwitz, entrance warning Zyklon B or something like that. And then after everybody gets scared as hell and all this, you know, it gets in the news and all this stuff erupts, I can just stand up at a meeting and say, hey man, it was me that did it, but it was for an art project. And I'm sorry if I caused anybody any trauma or pain. Well, they're not going to take my straight white, ass and say, okay, well, the police did an investigation and we've determined it was part of an art project. And that's that. They'll say, okay, you're out of here. You're no longer a student here. You're expelled. Okay. Well, and the other story is, and I don't even have to pull up a link for this one because I'm familiar with this story. Yesterday, a hashtag started, got pretty big called I Stand With Ahmed. Now, Ahmed, as you can imagine, is an Arab. He's a student at public school here in the United States somewhere. Well, apparently Ahmed made a clock, right? Now the clock is a briefcase with an old, you know, big hand-sized Nokia cell phone attached to it and a bunch of wires all coming out all over the place, hanging out of it and everything. He brings this into the public school. Now the teachers and all, they see this Arab student walking around with this briefcase with a cell phone attached to it with wires hanging out of it and an LED display with red numbers on it that are ticking down. And so naturally they call the cops, and the cops come out there and they arrest him and take the thing, you know, the bomb squad has to check out and confirm it's not a bomb and all that. And so this big hashtag erupted and the left is screaming how racist the school was, how racist the cops were and all that. And Barack Obama has invited him up to the White House and told him to bring his clock with him and all that. And me and all my friends were saying, there is something wrong with this. This is a setup of some kind. And it turns out that it was. His father, who put him up to this, is a Muslim attorney who, if you remember a few months back, maybe a year back, it might have been last Labor Day, there was this preacher over in somewhere like South Carolina or Mississippi, somewhere like that, it seems like, but the story's familiar. This preacher who was going to go out, and since, because the, something like the Muslims were getting mad about that, some, YouTube video that depicted the prophet in a bad light or something like that, and they were wanting Sharia law here, it was all in the news. So this, redneck preacher guy was going to have this big ceremony where he burned a Quran. Well, this kid's father is a Muslim attorney who was agitating to represent the, he went to court and tried to sue the guy. And as the client that he was representing, the client was the Quran.
That's been done before. Weird stuff like that.
Right. But what I'm saying is this was a setup thing. His father put him up to do this. They purposely put together a contraption that they knew would appear like a bomb, to anyone who looked at it.
How many times the FBI and the CIA done that same identical thing?
Well, I know, but the point of it was so that when the school and the police
overreacted,
I didn't overreact. All the crap that's going on with terrorism.
They didn't take Netanyahu out in chains when he drew pictures of bombs.
Which means they underreacted.
So why should they underreact for this guy?
They didn't underreact. I think they reacted appropriately. He's not going to be charged with anything now. This was a setup.
Good point, though.
What?
That his dad's trying to accomplish in the way.
If a white kid had come in there with something like
that. Why this has got nothing to do with race.
No,
it's all religious shit.
No. What they're screaming is racist.
They can scream all they want to. That's not a racist matter.
They're saying, well, we don't even know that this kid is Muslim. All we know is that he's Arab and that they're claiming that the only reason he did this is
Arab. Why you've got to stop these people from destroying your nationality by not letting them come to your country.
I agree. Because, see, the thing is,
you don't bring your troubles home. Rome learned that the hard way.
Yeah. Now, it might, and I can see what I think may be your point here. If you're looking at this as just an issue, if you take the race issue out of it and you just say a student had this and you think that they overreacted by not checking out whether, but here's
a student had a six shooter and took John Lennon down in the middle of the day in the middle of the street.
He wasn't a student anymore, was he?
It doesn't matter, student age.
Yeah.
No. He wasn't black.
No. No, but I'm saying take color out of it.
That's what I would say.
Even if you had a white student there, they'd react the same way. But the narrative is anti-white now. And so this is racism. But the thing is, yeah, you're right. The diversity and the multiculturalism is the problem here.
Racist matter, what they're talking about.
Yeah, but the people
I don't care about stupid people.
The people who actually committed the act and the people like Barack Obama and all these leftists who are pushing this I Stand With Ahmed thing are racial agitators. And that's what this is all about.
This whole thing may have been set up from the beginning to give president a public viewing.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that what it was set up for was so that this lawyer could sue the school system and the police on behalf of his son and make a lot of money. But it blew up bigger than even they expected. Now they're getting a White House trip out of it. But anyway, you want to move on to the next thing?
Yeah, I don't see any race issue there.
No, what you're doing is you're looking at this rationally.
Well, how else would you look at anything?
When something blows up big in the culture, in order to properly understand it, you have to look at it through their ignorant glasses.
Those off a long time ago.
No. I'm not saying you have to believe what you see through them, but to understand what is going on, you have to put yourself in the shoes of these morons, and they're all making it a racial thing.
Well, they can make anything they want, but still not racism. You're talking about a bomb.
Well, no, the racism is coming from the people who are calling it a racist thing.
Well, they're stupid.
Well, we know that. But the society is falling for this crap.
That's why it's doomed. This society's doomed. It's probably going to fall. This civilization will probably fall apart 12 months from now.
You think?
I think the handwriting's on the wall for this country.
Yeah.
Many, many Tecumseh farces are being written on the walls right now in Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Well, that's the government.
So with Belshazzar.
That's not necessarily society.
Well, your society depends on this government to hold that money thing together.
Well, as long as the government's doing that, but, you know.
Same thing happened in post-World War I Germany.
Yeah. Post-World War I United States. It was worse here because we didn't have anybody to turn it around for us the way they did. While they were having the booming economy that was the miracle of the world, we were still stuck in the Great Depression.
They didn't have a booming economy until Hitler came into power and took control of that economic crap.
That's who I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's back.
That's the 30s.
I said at post-World War I, though, they were in deep poverty with
absolutely. Yeah.
Millions of marks to make a dollar.
Yeah, well, you're talking about the Weimar Republic. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard this term, but people are using it for the United States big time now. Weimerica. Like Weimar, why America? That's what we're at. That's what we got. Well, that's why that video called, I've shown it to you before, and I have it posted in an article on asthmador.com called my answer to the Jewish question. It's got this video in there. The video is titled Adolf Hitler, the man who fought the banks. And it takes a speech of his where he lays out in precise detail and absolute clarity and absolute precision what was going on in Germany, or what had gone on in Germany, that had caused the problems that he had fixed. And in the video, it shows their counterparts now in the United States. And it should be a very, very troubling thing to anybody who watches it, who is even remotely stuck in the headspace that everybody's been put in for the last 60 or 70 years, where, you know, Hitler, bad, 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 wrong, 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 all this Jewish stuff, good, good, good. But anyway, to move on, I guess.
Hitler's only mistake was falling for the lie of England.
Yeah. Well, we talked when we did our first Wednesday edition, our first regular Wednesday edition of Hidden Mysteries Radio on Thursday night. we talked about the hashtag I Stand With Ann.
Where's the electronic Ann? Yeah.
More every day.
Okay.
What's interesting now is, you know, she did that Wednesday night, sent out those tweets that just has seemed to have shaken the whole conservative world and really.
Did it give Tel Aviv constipation all over town?
Yeah, I think so. I think the skunk trucks have, had to take a day off of, spraying Palestinian homes with the raw sewage because the Jews are all stopped up right now. But, yeah, man, I think I posted a video of that when I talked about this before. When I brought it up, I said, did you know that Israel has what they call skunk trucks, that are the septic tank trucks that, you know, that vacuum out our septic tanks, except they've got the vacuum pump turned the other way, where it blasts like a fire hose, and they fill these things up and they drive around in Gaza and spray Palestinian homes with it, just coat them in it. And there's video after video of them doing it on YouTube. And I think I posted one of the videos of that. But anyway, Ann Coulter, we talked about how she, had put out these controversial tweets about Jews because she was so disgusted by what was going on with all the Israel pandering and all the crap about the America was founded on the principles of Judaism and all that crap that Kasich and Cruz and all were saying. Well, the Jews in the media are immediately striking back, and they're not doing too well. And you can tell what a frenzy they're in because of how hyperbolic the language is. Check this out. This is from Vocative. White supremacists back Ann Coulter's comments about GOP candidates. Says author and conservative commentator Ann Coulter garnered a wave of support following Wednesday night's GOP debate. After accusing Republican presidential candidates of catering to Jews when they emphasized plans to improve ties with Israel, she was backed by white supremacists in the face of opposition. And here is quoting her tweets. Now, these were two tweets in a row, and I only last night read and posted the one that had the actual J word in it. But here's what the two tweets were. She said, her first one was, Cruz, Huckabee, Rubio all mentioned Israel in their response to what will America look like after you are president.
It'll look like Israel.
Well, no, they talked about America was going to be a place that did every damn thing Israel ever wanted them to do for them.
We're talking about we're going to look like it, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that was the preamble. And then she said, how many effing Jews do these people think there are in the United States? She wrote in another, prompting outraged Twitter users to slam Coulter's comments as anti-Semitic. If you remember, Ghost, you heard it here first, because
I've told you that before.
What?
Jews are not Semites.
Well, no, but as we discussed on the last show when we talked about this, anti-Semitic means somebody a Jew doesn't like.
Oh.
But anyway.
Made up definition.
Well, it's a working definition. It's just like, you know, if you look up, you know, dictionary definitions when it comes to word to sociological words are no good, because one thing, when you're arguing with these really hardcore third wave feminists, you'll tell them, hey, you know, feminism is female supremacy. You guys just want to destroy men, you know, and they'll say, duh, here's the dictionary definition. And the dictionary definition says feminism as the belief that men and women should be equal. Well, that's not, absolutely not what feminism is. That's what they say it is. That's not what it is. And it's the same thing with this stuff. But anyway, it says, but white supremacists quickly rose to her defense. And if you remember, you heard this here first before this hit the news media, because I was there and I told you about the hashtag getting started. And interestingly enough, I was just talking about the hashtag I stand with Ahmed. Well, we took this hashtag from that hashtag that had trended the same day. And it says, white supremacists quickly rose to her defense. Some of her supporters said that accusing Coulter of anti-Semitism amounted to censorship, which they brazenly leveled as Coulter cost. She also garnered praise from white nationalist communities on Reddit, 4chan, and Vote, as well as white supremacist forums. And see, and here's more of the slander. And this has all been slander so far. These are not white supremacist forums. But it says, like the KKK's Stormfront.org. The Stormfront is not owned by the KKK, okay? It's not run by the KKK. The guy who owns it was associated with the KKK 40 years ago. Anyway, within hours, the hashtag I stand with Anne was trending on Twitter in cities across the country. The top hashtags associated with posts using the hashtag included hashtag white genocide and numerous phrases related to support for Donald Trump, according to Evocative Analysis, which also found that many of her Facebook fans come from areas with rising levels of anti-Semitic hate crimes, including rural and suburban parts of Florida that witnessed several acts of anti-Semitic vandalism last year. And then it shows several tweets, and like there's one from Angelo John Gage. I stand with Anne because I know that a Coulter cost will happen because she stood up against Zionism and white genocide. Here's one from Lana Locktiff, the charming hostess of Radio 3.
There's nothing in her statement about she's standing up for white against white genocide.
No, there actually is not in that particular tweet. No, but she has been standing up against that. Her whole book, Adios America, explicitly says that if you change the racial demographic of America, it will no longer be America. That's what the whole book's about.
I understand that, but that's not the phrase she used in that tweet.
No, she didn't use the phrase. But look, if I say it's wrong to fuck children, and then somebody says, hey, thumbs up to Asmodor for endorsing pedophilia. Well, I didn't use the phrase pedophilia, but I opposed it, you know? And if you're opposing this mass immigration of third worlders into the United States, you are definitely opposing white genocide, whether you're using that term or not.
I'm opposing economic genocide.
I know. Well, but the thing is, Ghost, it's not wrong to oppose white genocide, especially when it's even-handed guys like us who oppose genocide in any form. Is it?
I just think there's too many other more crucial problems to worry about at the moment.
Yeah, well,
I mean, we can't even stop the destruction of Palestine.
Yeah.
Because we're all too good of friends with Israel.
Well, I hear you. Being big friends with Israel is a huge part of white genocide.
Because they've done so much for us.
Yeah.
That's what they keep telling us.
I had some goober tell me today that the literal translation of Palestinian is invader. I've never heard that before. It was a Jewish
literal translation of Israel.
Uh-huh.
His father, the sun god.
Yeah.
Ra.
Right.
El God.
Right.
So they're worshiping the sun god and they're calling us crazy?
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking about people who some of their sects have rituals in New York where they'll roll out on a Saturday morning and wring the necks of hundreds of live chickens.
God bless them.
Yeah.
I did not find that in the Bible or the Torah either.
No.
There's no chicken cracking in there.
I wish I could remember who had tweeted this, but
KFC is coming right behind them and picking them up.
Yeah. Oh, I think it was this guy Brooks Bain who runs Theden.tv. I was brought that little story was brought to my attention by a tweet that he sent out that had a link to that story, and he said Michael Vick fights dogs, gets federal prison time. Jews kill hundreds of chickens every week, get judicial cover. And that's exactly what they got. A judge ruled that it wasn't even disorderly conduct for them to go out there and do that.
Not even animal cruelty in it.
No, nothing. But anyway, I guess, Ann Coulter, has responded. She hasn't apologized for anything. And all these people calling her anti-Semitic and everything, she laughed at it and said, I didn't make that comment because I hate Jews. I made that comment because I hate the GOP candidates who pander to them. It's exactly what she said. And, I don't think this is going to hurt Ann. I think this is going to make Ann more popular than ever. It's not like she works for Fox News anyway. And you know, this book she's got, Adios America, it upset the establishment so badly that she has not gotten any of the, you know, all the places that she used to be welcome, like the O'Reilly Show and all that. She has not been asked on the, or allowed on the O'Reilly Show to talk about her book or any of the issues surrounding it or any of that, or on any of the other channels. And yet her book has been a New York Times bestseller for, I think, 54 weeks in a row now.
I bet even Glenn Beck wouldn't let her on.
Oh no. She'd put Glenn Beck on a spit and roast him like a big old pig with an apple in his mouth. He doesn't want to mess with her, and he knows it. But anyway, I guess we'll move on to what's going to be our featured story of the night. And you don't even know really what it's all about yet, do you?
I don't know what you hadn't told me what you've been thinking about talking about.
Okay, well, here it is. I ran across this story early this morning, and I thought, man, what an interesting story for us to go into here and discuss it, because we have similar experience through different circumstances to what's going on here. This is from Daily Stormer. It was posted over a week ago, but I had never noticed it. Somebody tweeted out a link to it. The headline, Wacko Jew. I'm sorry. This is not it. So it was probably posted. Yeah, here it is. It was posted day before yesterday, but still I hadn't seen it. So anyway, Israeli-trained FBI agent Todd Warner wants to be friends with the Daily Stormer. Says, so like most people these days, this is Andrew Anglin, the guy who owns and runs Daily Stormer, posted this. So like most people these days, I have an email address. I also have a Twitter account, a phone number, and so on. But for whatever reason, media, law enforcement, and various other Jewish ethnic activist outlets prefer to call my father. Probably the reason is that they think he'll talk to them and they know I won't. They also appear to get off on the idea of intimidating my family. But that is, of course, mere conjecture. So anyway, following the Joshua Goldberg debacle, and this, let me throw in here what the Joshua Goldberg debacle was. That's the other thing I had to open here. This wacko Jew terrorist Joshua Goldberg attempted to infiltrate the Daily Stormer. Well, last week, the feds, here it is, here's just a real quick excerpt from the story. A young Jewish American has been charged with pretending to be an Australian-based Islamic State jihadist after FBI joint investigation with the Australian Federal Police based on information provided by Fairfax Media. Joshua Ryan Goldberg, a 20-year-old living at his parents' house in the U.S. state of Florida, is accused of posing online as Australi Witness, an ISIS supporter who publicly called for a series of attacks against individuals and events in Western countries. In recent days, Australi Witness has claimed online that he is working with other jihadists to plan attacks in Australia and the United States. He distributed pictures of a bomb that he was working on with 2 pounds of explosives inside. Early on Friday, Australian time, Goldberg was arrested at his home by Florida police for distribution of information relating to explosives, destructive devices, and weapons of mass destruction. An affidavit okay, let me get through here. An affidavit sworn in the case says that between August 19th and 28th, Goldberg distributed information pertaining to the manufacture of explosive, destructive devices or weapons of mass destruction in furtherance of an activity that constitutes a federal crime of violence. U.S. Attorney Lee Bentley III said Goldberg instructed a confidential source how to make a bomb similar to two used in the Boston Marathon bombings 2 years ago that killed three people and injured more than 260 others. He's accused of instructing someone how to fill it with nails, metal, and other items dipped in rat poison. Police based the charge on his communication of five web links to sites that provided instructions that could be used to make explosives as part of a plot to explode a bomb on September 13th at a memorial ceremony in Kansas City commemorating the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Now, this guy, the reason I went through this, he just got arrested for this. A few months back, he had posted on Daily Stormer under a false name. He's a guy, he said, I got some stuff to post. And Anglin allowed him to post because he liked some of the stuff he had written. But over just a very short amount of time, his writing style changed and he started advocating weird stuff. And Anglin got suspicious of him. So just without saying anything about it, he just started throwing the guy's stuff in file 13 and wouldn't publish his stuff anymore. And then this happened. And when this happened, it came when he got arrested, this Jewish guy in Florida, Joshua Goldberg, the reporter started reporting that he had been a writer for Daily Stormer and all that. Okay, so now back to the story about the FBI agent. It's a tangled web. He says, so anyway, following the Joshua Goldberg debacle, I expected some attempted questioning. Not that I have anything to say that wasn't in my essay about my experiences with this Jew. My personal policy is that there are three things I will say to a federal agent. Am I under arrest? Can I see a warrant? And most importantly, I want to speak to a lawyer. But my dad has a slightly different policy, and I guess had a conversation with Special Agent Todd on the phone, then emailed him a follow-up. Date, Monday, September 14th. Good morning. First, let me thank you for taking... This is from the FBI agent. Let me thank you for taking my call earlier. As I explained, I'm looking to speak with your son, Andrew, and had limited ways of reaching him. I now understand that he is out of the United States and that you can forward this email to him. I would like to speak with him about his website. In my experience, people who have extreme and dangerous intentions gravitate to edgy websites like Daily Stormer. I want to be clear that I understand the Constitution and the First Amendment. I have no intention of delving into that area. I am most concerned with protecting the United States from dangerous people. I would like to be a point of contact for Andrew. If he should encounter anyone who feels is dangerous and might do harm, I understand that he might be reluctant to contact law enforcement. I would also like to discuss any past experience with potentially violent people. Please forward this email to him. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Special Agent Todd Warner, Federal Bureau of Investigation, Columbus, Ohio Joint Terrorism Task Force, 612-224-1183, office number 614-849-1724, and email todd.warner@ic.fbi.gov. And then Andrew shows where he made certain this agent Todd Warner never emailed Anglin. He did a search. He never emailed Anglin. So limited ways of reaching him seems a bit dishonest. And if I may interject here, everyone I've ever known who had the FBI trying to mess with them, before they would come contact the individual that they've been following, the first thing they would do would be to go to the workplace of their wife, if they had a wife, or of their parents, if they didn't have a wife, and make sure that the whole office knew that we're the FBI and we're here to talk to them about their husband or about their son. But nobody's in any trouble. It's just we're worried about some terrorism stuff or some drug stuff or whatever. And so the first thing you do is start scaring the crap out of your family. And he says, almost as if he was approaching my family as a form of intimidation. But the email itself, that seems pretty reasonable, right? And he goes in, I'm skipping down. He says, maybe this agent Todd Warner is just a concerned goy like me who wants to prevent Jews from blowing things up. And Special Agent Todd even makes a point to tell my father that he understands I have a constitutional right to free speech. Cool. Sounds like we could end up really great friends. But wait, before I voluntarily walk into a situation where an FBI agent is obviously trying to either entrap me or try and make me an informant, let's do a bit of Googling. Oh, dear. What's this here on the Dayton, Ohio InfraGuard website? FBI Special Agent Todd Warner will discuss a 2008 diplomatic visit to Israel for a look inside the Israeli security agency, the Shin Bet. The presentation details the inner workings of Shin Bet and is illustrated with on-the-ground photos, visit details, and personal stories. This presentation has been a scene setter for intelligence briefings. Blah, 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 blah. Special Agent Warner will also answer questions regarding a temporary assignment to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba in 2005. Blah, 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 blah. Todd Warner is a special agent with the Federal Bureau of Investigation working under our former InfraGuard coordinator, Ken Wall, in the Cincinnati District Office. He's been an agent for 12 years and has been assigned Denver and Phoenix and Columbus. Specifically, he was assigned to investigate counter-narcotics until 2001 when he was reassigned to the counterterrorism program. Special Agent Warner has been a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force, a principal relief supervisor for the JTTFs in Phoenix and Columbus, and most recently assigned as the primary source informant recruiter for the FBI's Field Intelligence Group. He also specializes in interview and interrogation instruction for the FBI. Special Agent Warner is a certified special weapons and tactics team operator. So it's an Israeli-trained informant recruiter who wants to be my friend. I tell you what, guys, sounds a little suspicious. What do you think of this so far, Ghost?
Too much there to hear.
Too much to hear?
It's crap, so I'm saying all of it.
Well, yeah, but this is something that's going to start happening more and more often, and people need to know.
That's been happening more and more often than most people realize to begin with.
Well, yeah, but there's, you know, as the age of the internet wears on, more and more individual people start getting their own blogs and stuff, and the real focus of the federal government when it comes to terrorism stuff has shifted from, you know, like Islamic Jihad and all that stuff. If you look at what was the top 10 terrorist groups 10 years ago and what are the top 10 now, they're the same groups, but they've totally shifted in the order of what the federal government thinks their, you know, which one's most dangerous. And now it's people like, that run, you know, Americans who run blogs that have edgy political opinions are at the top of the list. And this is where all the stuff shifted to. Another thing that I thought was really interesting in here, that stuck out to me even more than the Israeli trading is that this guy was a counter narcotics agent before he became a counterterrorism agent, which means he moved from the formerly dirtiest, subdivision of law enforcement in history to the new current dirtiest subdivision of law enforcement in history. But I want all of our listeners to understand that what Anglin is telling you here is absolutely correct. These guys call up wanting to be your friend and all. They're not trying to help you. They're trying to entrap you. And once they get you started, boy, you're never going to have enough of what they require from you.
Never. I just know people already been set up by them and hanging in prison now.
Yeah.
For something they never did.
Yeah.
Because the informant agent or whatever they call it, when they turned agent that infiltrated their little 2-man group.
Yeah.
Did the illegal action that they got charged with.
Well, and if you want to know how they fight this stuff, look at how they do the drug war. Let me relate a couple of anecdotes from here locally. This one female that I knew, and I talked to her about this stuff a lot of times. I told her, you know, I would tell her the standard stuff. The cop pulls you over and he wants to ask you a bunch of questions. It's telling me not answering the questions. Here's your driver's license. Here's your insurance. Do you have a ticket to write me? Am I free to go? That kind of crap. Don't answer questions. And I said, if they ask the permission to search your car, don't tell them. Yeah. Don't let them in there. Well, this girl that I'd told all these things 1,000 times, the first time she got pulled over, she violated every one of the rules. She trusted the cop more than she trusted me. And, you know, because he told her, he said, look, I know you got something in your car and I'm coming in there anyway. But if you don't give me your permission, whatever I find, I'm going to charge you with it. But if you give me your permission to search this car, or actually he said, if you just tell me what you got in here and hand it over, I'm not going to charge you. And she said, okay, well, the only thing I've got is some empty baggies that, you know, might have still have a little residue left over and whatever. She handed them over to him, and he charged her with every bit of it. Well, she's sitting in jail, and the local district attorney's narcotics undercover agent, you know, comes to the jail, and she gets called out like she's got a visit or something. She doesn't know what's going on, and there he is, and he says, well, you want to stay in here or you want to get out? And she said, what are you talking about? Well, you know, you get out, I'm going to give you a phone number, my cell phone, and I want you to start calling me and telling me where the drugs are so we can do some busts. And you do that, and we'll do everything we can to help you when you get, when you go into court in front of that judge. And I had told her before, when we would hear the rumors about other people doing this stuff, I'd tell them, don't you ever do it, because when they tell you we'll do everything we can to help you, they're being honest, because there's not one damn thing they can or will do, and they're going to do every bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was even when I found out that she was doing this and put a stop to it, it was even worse than I thought, because what they had done was they'd taken this girl out of there and put her on the street, and they told her they wanted a bust every day. They wanted a SWAT team bust every day. And the way that they would get it out of her is they would have her, she would go someplace and they had dope. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she'd call them and they would say, okay, where is it at? And they'd name a place about a half mile away. And they'd say, we'll meet you there in 20 minutes. And they said, there better be dope there. We better not do a raid and it all be gone and all that stuff, you know? Well, they'd get there and they'd meet and they'd interrogate her and get the lay of the place and all that. And they'd go over there and they'd do a bust. And when they came back, they give her $50 and tell her, I expect a phone call tomorrow. And the threat was, the minute that you stop giving us a phone call every day, we're going to come get you and put you back in the jail, and you can just wait there until you go in front of the judge and all that. Well, I had no idea. I mean, I wasn't around her much. I had no idea she was doing this. And one day she called me up wanting to talk to me, and I met her at this diner in Tyler, and she told me about this. And I said, look, this is over. And then, you know, we're out here in this little rural area where all these drug addicts and they all know one another. And every single day, one of them is getting SWAT team raided by the county right after you come over. I said, you're going to disappear one day. And I said, and think about this, all these people that you're getting busted, you're going to end up going to court in a few months, one way or the other. And you're going to go to prison. And guess who you're going to be doing time with? And, she's, oh, well, they told me that they won't give them my name. And I said, well, guess what? Any of them who doesn't just go right up there and plead guilty is going to get your name, because they're going to plead not guilty, and you're going to have to come in there and testify. And so, you know, that was the end of that right then. But everything that I said was absolutely true. When she went to court, there was no help offered whatsoever. They hammered her to the max, and she went and did prison time and all that.
And
cooperating with the police is the worst thing you can possibly do.
I agree. But I mean, that's no dispute.
Well, included in this article, I mean, I know it's no dispute with you, but I think that the listeners need to understand this stuff, because it's a real hard.
They haven't learned the cops are not their friends yet.
Yeah. Well, I'm here to teach them. You know,
they're all too stupid to be your friend. They're just stupid enough to lie about you.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, the police have so many psychological tools. When they have you out by yourself on the side of the road somewhere, or they're calling you up at your house by yourself, or they're calling your parents and your wife and all that, they have so many psychological tools that they can use on people that work on people. And they worked on me when I was young, you know, and it took a lot of heart. I mean, not everybody's the genius you are, Ghost, that can see through this crap before they've really had to get churned through the system.
I don't know if there is a way to do it without getting the hard knocks.
Yeah.
I really don't think there is. Until somebody has to suffer it, they won't get off their butts and learn how to fix it.
Well, if there is, I'll tell you what it is that, you know, anybody who can learn without the bad experience. Anglin loaded a video in here, and it's an old video. It's one that I've watched, and that I always recommend to people. What it is, it's some seminar that was given at some little, like, community center building or something. And it's a retired, well, there's a defense attorney, a high level defense attorney is one of the speakers, and the other one's a retired police detective. And the title of the video is Don't Talk to Police. And both of them give a talk, and it doesn't matter how much you know about it. When you hear the ins and outs, especially from the cop, not the lawyer, but the cop, about how they can take innocuous statements from an innocent person and make that person guilty of anything they want to make them guilty of in the eyes of a jury just by twisting the stuff that they say to them. That's a real wake up call there. And I'm going to post that video in with the,
I bet you half this country or more, probably 90% of this country won't even believe a statement they read or see on the net about it until they experience it.
Well, maybe so, but hopefully, the folks who, you know, I know there are a lot of folks out there who are, you know, that listen to, I know because they tell me on social media every day. There are a lot of folks out there who listen to our show who think we're pretty smart guys and appreciate our opinion. And I guess I went through this for them. But let's shift gears real quick and talk about one more thing before we go. I think this will interest you a little more. One thing that came out during the debates, and it's all the other Republicans have been attacking Trump over this. Trump wants to raise taxes on the super wealthy.
He's got Warren Buffett's vote.
Well, but
Warren Buffett wants to.
Well, Warren Buffett says he wants to, but then he does everything he can not to pay.
No, he's like he said on CNN one time or CNBC that he takes every legal avenue open to him.
Well, the big Republican talking point on that is if you want to pay more, you can write a check to the IRS and send it to them, and they'll cash it and not give you any trouble about it.
Yeah, and people talk like that haven't got a clue.
Yeah.
They just don't have a clue how to run a country. They shouldn't be a politician or in the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, Ben Carson wants to do that fair tax thing where they put like they get rid of the income tax and put a 14% consumption tax. What do you think of that? That's what Rand Paul and Huckleberry want to do, too.
I don't know about 14%. It's a little steep on it.
Well, I think Huckleberry wants it to be 11.
I don't believe in Huckleberry, period.
Right.
Him and his pornographer sons.
Right. Are they?
Got caught in the Baptist seminary with porn stuff under the mattress.
Oh. Well, they all do that. Here's one thing, one problem I have with it. If a person,
he's a preacher, that's the thing I have wrong.
No. With the consumption tax instead of an income. I'm okay with an income tax as long as it's a constitutional income tax, which means there's no payroll tax because payroll is not being paid wages is not income.
Try to convince an agent of that.
All right, but another thing Trump said, he said the hedge fund guys are not going to like his. And he said, and lots of them are my friends, but I don't care. They're not going to like my tax plan. They're going to be paying a whole lot more of the taxes that get paid in this country.
They should be because they've destroyed this country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, since you're
Federal Reserve, I had to pay taxes.
You're and by the way, I was leafing through some Hidden Mysteries books last night when I got home, and I started reading the Utopian Aryan Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was looking through there, by the way, one of the great benefits that I get from being over here all the time is I have a vast library of books from HiddenMysteries.com. But anyway, while I was looking at the books, I saw Texan Arise, and I grabbed that out and leafed through it again, and man, you know a lot about Texas, Ghost, and you know a lot about the law, and you know a lot about all these issues. So let's just put it in this context. If Texas became a republic today and you were in charge of it, what would be your preferred system of taxation for the Republic of Texas?
I would probably choose a non-progressive income tax.
Yeah.
Where it's flat 10% across the board or something like that.
But would that include payroll taxes?
No, no such thing as payroll taxes. You just owe your tax.
Well, no, I mean, okay, so if I go to work at the Carrier air conditioning plant 40 hours a week.
It's not employer's job to collect. They're not the tax collectors.
No, I mean, okay, well, let me change that. I'm not talking to, you're talking about withholding. I'm talking about a tax on my pay. Would there be a tax on my pay if I were now
as a worker? There's a tax on your pay now?
I know there is.
It's withholding.
Well, now, the withholding part is where you have to have it withheld before you even see it, you know.
And where are you talking? Where are you seeing the other tax?
Well, I'm talking
Medicare, about Social Security.
No. I'm talking about whether it's withheld or not. Even if you got rid of the withholding and you say that, well, it's not the employer's job to collect it. Okay. But you know, it wasn't always done that way. Before World War II, you had to file it yourself. The employer didn't have to file it for you. But even though you got paid by the hour, you had to report to the IRS how much you had made and pay a percent. But what I'm saying is, will there be taxes on a private individual's wages under this system? That's what I'm trying to get at.
Probably.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, fair enough. What do you think is a healthy percentage?
Well, Jerry Brown, and he ran for president decades ago, proposing 10% flat tax that you file your tax on your income on a postcard.
Well, that's exactly what Ben Carson is talking. Well, not filing on a postcard, but Ben Carson is talking about somewhere around 10%. And he says it's a good idea because it's the same thing as tithing.
Well, that's a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Not a very good Christian if he believes in tithing.
Why is that?
Jesus came to forgive us of the law. We're no longer bound by the law.
Right.
So we're supposed to be lawless.
Right.
So why do they want you to obey a tithing law that he did away with?
Well, I don't know. Why?
Because they're idiots.
Oh, you just called Ben Carson an idiot.
So?
Oh, okay.
I like him, though. He's a good doctor.
Yeah.
Double politician.
Well, he's got a lot of bad ideas. He really does.
He's got a conglomeration of ideas that have been loosely assembled together into a non-working program.
Yeah. Well, I think the further along this thing goes, the more I support Trump out of the other candidates. He's really going along what we need. He's very pragmatic.
Well, Democrats are going to run Angelina Jolie. They're running up, first runner up.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. Now, how do you vote for?
Huh?
Now, who do we vote for?
Well, I ain't voting for Angelina Jolie. But,
Annie Coulter.
Oh. I don't believe the Democrats are going to run her. I would like to see Trump Coulter 2016. That would be great.
That would be a funny ticket.
But the idea that the thing that I'm trying to figure out how to word this properly. I think the thing that has one of the things that has really stalled any type of moving forward and having things work properly and everything is that there is absolutely no pragmatism in politics anymore because both parties have ideologies that most closely resemble the way a person behaves about their religious beliefs. Like if you talk to a libertarian or a far right conservative about certain taxation issues, they'll always tell you how, oh no, that's wrong because, and they won't give you a because that is because it doesn't work for this reason or that. It's always a because my ideology says that it's wrong for this ideological reason. And the Democrats will have their opposite ideological reason about doing this or not doing that. When what you definitely really need is a third way where you say, okay, rather than having this ideology that we have to fit everything else in the world to it, what we do is first we come up with a goal, and the goal is society X that operates in Y and Z manner. And moving forward, what we do is every program, every idea, we judge its merit on, does it move us toward achieving that goal? What do you think of that?
You're wanting to run it like a corporation.
Am
Some
I?
Corporations were operating normally.
Right. Well, what I'm wanting to run it like is something that actually has a chance of achieving what the people want. And I'm not talking about some type of utopian fantasy here. I'm talking about a place where the roads get fixed, the trash gets picked up, the hospitals operate, we're not in $100 zillion of debt, we're not at war all over the planet, we're not at each other's
You're
throat.
You're not going to find that until you get the one candidate that steps up from either party and says, fuck Israel.
Yeah, I agree.
You're not going
to
see it.
Hey, I want to, just occurred to me, I want to ask you, you have told me before what you thought the best type of government is. What's the best? I mean, and it's not a type of government that you can just go out and get for yourself. You've told me before, I believe, if I'm not incorrect, is a benevolent dictator is the best kind of government you can hope for, right?
That's not my, it wasn't my creation, but that's what I've read, and you start studying why they say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I agree. A benevolent dictator who loves his people is absolutely the best form of government. The only problem is,
who's next?
Not only that, what's the percentage of them that have been benevolent?
I think the guy down in Venezuela was.
Well, I think he was benevolent, but I don't think he was all that practical.
Well, when you come into a country that's been destroyed by capitalism, wayward capitalism, that's, he had to fight with the
bone tools. Corporatism is really what it was destroyed.
They went and raped the country and left all those factories without not even running them anymore.
Yeah. Have you ever read Tales of an Economic Hitman?
No.
Well, I haven't either, but I've read interviews with the guy that wrote it. And I believe that's the title of it, Tales of an Economic Hitman. And the guy back in the 50s and 60s, he worked for these shell corporations that the CIA had set up, you know, that they were down in all the South American countries. You know, there would be shell corporations selling bananas and coffee and all that stuff. And what they were doing was they were down there intentionally destroying the economies of those countries and causing coups and stuff. So that we could run things down there.
That didn't fare for too well, did it?
Well, no, but it's still, I mean, most of South America is still in the grips of it, and the ones that aren't still in the grips of it are still trying to recover from it.
I know that Chavez went and paid several countries IMF bills off so they'd never have to get entangled with that slavery again.
Yeah. Well,
that's being a benevolent dictator.
Yeah.
Even though he was elected.
Right. Well, what, you know, while we're talking about this, you know, it occurs to me, I know you always say 1861 is when it all started to go bad and everything, but at what point was it, do you think, and was it before 1861 or after 1861, at what point was it that America, the American government metaphorically crossed the Rubicon? You know, that's what happened in Rome when Caesar's, troops crossed the Rubicon into Rome, and Rome suddenly was no longer, I mean, just that was the moment. It was no longer a republic. It was a dictatorship becoming an empire. When I think it happened sometime around the Mexican War was when we crossed the Rubicon and started becoming an empire. Actually, or it could have been the Louisiana Purchase.
It wasn't the Louisiana Purchase. It was the Treaty of 1850 with the Republic of Texas, with State of Texas. They stole all that land from Texas.
Yeah.
On their empire, their vision of empire.
Yeah.
You know, when Texas told them about annexation, said that Texas intends to be Texas from one coast to the next.
Yeah.
And that got them scared.
Right. What were they referring to, from the Gulf of Mexico out to the Pacific or what? Or
from the Pacific to the Atlantic.
Atlantic. Oh, so we were going to get some United States.
They knew they were going to fall away from the United States and become part of the United States of Texas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sure would have been a different world today, wouldn't it?
That's when the Rush Compromise of 1850 came through, where they gave Texas $10 million for, you know, what would that much land be worth today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're talking about most all of Colorado and part of Kansas and New Mexico. Yeah. And
half of New Mexico, all up in Arizona, Utah, Wyoming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd probably be worth a little more than $10 million. Well, I mean,
they never paid the $10 million either.
And how much? Oh, they didn't.
No.
Well, they owe us that with interest compound.
I think so.
is that part of what you guys were suing for when you put the
$93 trillion
lien? Yeah. Was, I guess, the $10 million in the compound interest over 150 years was a big chunk of that.
That included war reparations for the Civil War that they caused in Texas when Texas didn't cause the Civil War.
Well, why were you guys so generous with them? It seems like they owe a lot more than $93
trillion. I think it's being compounded daily.
Oh, okay. Well, wouldn't it be something if there was some way that they could force them to pay?
No, all they do now is just print it up.
Yeah. Well, they should have to pay in the same the same money that they were using when the
light specie.
Yeah. So they'd have to give it in gold. Is there $93 trillion worth of gold, you think?
Well, I'm sure there is.
Yeah. Well,
because them Jews just keep making it if they run out.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Can you make gold now?
Alchemy.
Yeah.
Found a little lead, turned it into gold.
Oh, Saint Germain claimed he could do it, didn't he? Yeah. Well, it's been an odd show, but I think it's been an interesting one.
Different.
I was surprised to see how disinterested you were in the whole FBI story thing, though. But I guess
I don't know if disinterested, maybe just getting tired.
Yeah, yeah, you are tired. You've been.
I had to get up early and get books done this morning.
Yeah, well, it's been real odd too, man. You know,
we got to me too.
Well, everywhere that you go, everybody seems to around here. Everybody seems, and this is a rural area where the air should be really good.
There's no breeze.
But everybody seems to be suffering from really severe allergies and all the time and breathing problems. And it leads one to wonder what's in that stuff they're spraying. You think maybe one of the shows next week we might ought to talk about what are they spraying?
You want to?
maybe we'll devote half or whole
show. A lot of people gather up stuff and try to get ingredient list, but they can't ever come public.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind everybody, we've got the, if you like the show and you want to donate a little bit, a couple of shekels towards, maybe paying some of the service fees that we pay every month, or, you know, if we get that paid and we get a little bit extra, maybe upgrading some of our equipment here. We've got the PayPal in the top right hand part of the, website there, and HiddenMysteries.com is the premier online internet alternative bookstore that powers Hidden Mysteries Radio. And we've got our new weekly show that it's a Wednesday night show where we don't go into the daily grind of whatever's in the news. We talk about more esoteric topics. You got any idea what you want to talk about this week, Ghost?
I hadn't thought of it yet.
Okay, well, we'll post something when...
There's a lot of good ones out there. I mean, Swedenborg, Jacob Bohm, Christian mystics that no one's ever heard of in today's world.
Yeah.
But the vast knowledge and study that preachers did before 1900 was like a Grand Canyon gulf between what a preacher has to know today.
Yeah. What about the Bible fraud?
Good book.
Is that a book you sell? Is that a Hidden Mysteries book? I've got the follow-up to that book, but I don't have that book. That's what I was going to read last night when I was looking through my stuff. I thought I had the Bible fraud, but I've got the follow-up to that book. So
I saw one that you probably picked up to have, and it was all a wrinkled cover.
Yeah? A Bible fraud one?
Yeah, I don't know where I saw it, but I did see it around here.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about, like I said, about being here. Not only do I have lots of Hidden Mysteries books that I've bought, but when I'm around here all the time, like if there's a second, like maybe the cover doesn't come out right or something like that, I get a free book.
Yeah. Even on pages you can't read.
Well, yeah, or sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, you know. But hey, who can complain about free? Well, anyway, so everybody check us out. We will endeavor to have the second Wednesday night show actually be recorded on Wednesday night. And hopefully as we move into the fall and winter, we're going to start doing our Friday Hidden Mystery Show live. That'd be cool, wouldn't it, Ghost?
Equipment, yeah.
Yeah, we have to get the equipment. And it may actually be a case of me getting some know-how, which might push it off a little further than winter 2015 because I learned slow. But anyway, everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you Wednesday night.
Bye.